Hey everybody, Perilous Garrus here for another episode of the CCHA Show. On today's episode, it's a bit of a different one, a special episode with the folks from Chasing McNaughton, Tim Brown, Dustin Lindstrom, Matt Cavender, and Rob Gilreath. I jump on their show, we kind of do almost a true crossover. We let Tim, who's kind of the leader over there, run the show as far as topics, but it's a good one. We hope you enjoy it. I'll also have interviews with Britt Lauritsen, the athletic director at Bemidji State, as well as sophomore forward Bradley Merrick from Ferris State. Hope you enjoy the show.
All right, let's get things started. Perry, you're doing your own podcast. I know I've listened some. How are things going with that this season?
I think pretty good. We try to, as folks who are hearing this on our show know, I try to get a couple interviews in. We had our first athletic director, Josh Morton from Augustana, who's going to be joining the league. Well, at least joining Division I hockey next year. They're going to be, you know, playing a few games against each team to sort of work their way into actual full schedule after a few years. But, you know, they have a brand new rink, Midco Arena, going in up there that should be ready by the middle of next season. So, you know, it's been good. Try to get a player and a coach when I can. So that's what people should expect down the stretch. It's going to be, you know, more and more interesting trying to find storylines to talk about. But I think for the most part, people have enjoyed it. And it's a good experience for the student athletes as well to we get to hear from some of the things. That's kind of the original goal, was to hear from the kids themselves and try to ask them some interesting questions that I could. So hopefully people are listening and enjoying the CCHA show.
Yeah. So I guess we might as well get right into the interesting topic from last week, and that's the pairwise. And your guest last week didn't sound too thrilled about having to understand math. I guess that's one of the big takeaways. And I know you kind of said the same thing, being an RPI guy, that like you kind of like the math. And one of the bigger things that I went into it probably a little more disgruntled about the conversation before than after, because I feel like the big takeaway is that they don't like the pair necessarily, like the pairwise. And if they're primarily focused on the RPI, I don't really blame them, because I feel like the RPI is, especially in college hockey, is such a made up thing with the percentages they chose to try and reduce the number of games that get ignored and that kind of thing, that it doesn't mean much when those percentages are as weird as they are, just to limit exceptions. So to me, but I would love to see it involve more Cratch, or now it's the CHN publishes it as their power ratings. But at the same time, that math is a lot more complicated for athletic directors and coaches and even us to understand. Like, I've never taken the time to develop a Cratch calculator, because it's complicated math to get those numbers. But I do think it does a better job of properly promoting teams, beating good teams, and playing tougher schedules overall than what the RPI does as that part of pairwise.
I do just want to make one distinction between you calling me an RPI guy. That was referring to Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute.
Yes.
And RPI being rating percentage index. I do want to make that. I'm not a rating percentage index guy.
That's true. That's fair. Yep.
That's fair. No.
Very confusing for the listener. I got you. Yep. Not everybody's been puck man in their life.
Not everyone's had that opportunity. Yeah.
We can argue until the cows come home about how fair the numbers are. We've talked a little bit about how pairwise can put too much emphasis on out-of-conference games so that it seems like your conference schedule doesn't matter as much. But to me, at the end of the day, I'd rather the tournament gets selected by data and numbers that can be backed up, that were calculated throughout the whole season, rather than a room full of people that was like, all right, I guess these are the ones that are going to be in the championship. Like, it kind of goes for football.
Yeah, because go ahead, Dustin.
I was just going to say, and it's transparent. Everybody knows where they're standing.
Yeah.
There's no secrets.
Except for this year, Stonehill decided to be thrown out halfway through the year. So
no, I don't think that's. I don't think that's what
truly happened. It doesn't affect that much. No,
but I don't think. I think they were thrown out no matter what because they weren't going to play enough, and the decision was ultimately made to just announce that they're going to be excluded because they didn't get more D1 games.
And they should be excluded.
And they should be. And the right. And the. Yeah.
For sure.
And the UConn administration that thinks it's a problem. I'm going to take a wild guess that when it's all said and done, that those games weren't going to help them get in. We'll have to see, but like, it's not likely.
If your tournament chances got dusted by Stonehill's 1-4 games at the D1 level getting thrown away, you probably didn't deserve to be in the tournament. I'll right. say that, you know?
Yep. We talked about this a little bit before we started recording, but one of the things that I found really interesting, and somebody pointed it out on our Discord, I forget who originally, but if the Alaska series between up in Alaska, between Tech and Alaska, means a lot to Michigan Tech right now. And Michigan Tech is sitting 10th. I guess I should look. Are they still 10th after Harvard won?
I just looked now. As long as we are 10th right now. Yeah. Okay. As long as it's updated, we are.
Yep. So at least then I know what I'm working with here. So Tech is currently 10th, tied for 10th, but winning and sitting in 10th. And I think Alaska's 19th, right? On the regular ones, Dustin? You got
correct.
It? Yep.
Correct.
Yep. I have it on my screen.
So if Alaska and Tech had split that series, Alaska would be 12th and Tech would be 19th. And if Alaska had swept that series, Tech and Alaska would be flipped, with Alaska at 10th and Michigan Tech at 19th. So that is one of the bigger problems with pairwise and the RPI is putting so much emphasis on those few non-conference games. But what else does it have to go on in comparing conferences? Like, that's what it has to do. I think Cratch does a better job of it. I might have to bug some of our better programmers to see if we can get a Cratch calculator, because I would. The other thing you don't know is what impact those games would have on Cratch. Like, I don't know what Alaska sweeping Tech does to the Cratch rankings. But the biggest thing to me that you don't want the smoke filled room for is, are you really telling me that, like, if RIT had not lost, I think they lost their last game, right?
I think they split last weekend.
Yeah. So if they had swept last weekend, they'd be sitting in an at-large bid right now. And you're telling me that a committee would ever give Atlantic Hockey two teams if RIT was there and didn't win their tournament? I don't think that ever happens. Or Alaska. Like, if Alaska wins out, they're probably in, pending a bunch of weird stuff. And I don't see how a committee would ever put Alaska in, even if they end up being, what would it be? What, 22, right? 22, 8-6, or 8-2, something like that. I just don't see that happening.
That's the fun of it being formulaic, right? I mean, college hockey is kind of special in the fact that you've got so many huge blue blood names and a bunch of smaller schools that really aren't known outside of the sport itself for even having a D1 program at all, right? And you get that name recognition the NCAA is probably going to go for when it comes to, you know, deciding who's going to make it into the tournament. This solves that problem. It's a formula. You know what it is at the beginning of the year. You know who makes it in, and there's nothing a committee can do about it besides shuffle some names around for attendance after the 16 teams are figured out. You know who they're going to be. It's fantastic. I love it.
I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't be opposed to the committee having more control over, like, flipping 12 and 13 if it fixes attendance, or 8-9 kind of stuff. I wish.
Sure.
I wouldn't have a problem with the committee having more ability to be flexible in how the field is laid out. But I love that they have no control over who the 16 are.
Yeah, they get their teams and then they get to deal with them. Yeah.
Yeah. I would have no problem especially if your RPIs were really close and the number of Like right now, Ohio State and Western.
You go on a title win.
Yeah, like right now, Ohio State and Western both have 52 comparisons, and they're within 23 RPI points. Like, you're telling me if it saved a headache to flip those two that they shouldn't be able to do that? I think
that's the difference between a 2 and a 3 seed. So.
Yeah,
I think protecting the top four is probably what needs to never change, right? But after that,
yep, protecting the top
four. It's okay to mix it up a bit.
And then I feel like the only other thing is making sure that anybody who got in that's outside the top 16 stays in that bottom band. Other than that, yeah, I think I'm okay with some shuffling.
Reasonable. I think it would be really interesting if kind of along those lines of thinking that, like you said, protect the top four, but then the committee gets to decide everything else. That'd be kind of an interesting kind of I don't think that's not necessarily what I want. I'm just saying it would be interesting if they went in there as like, you know what, I think these two teams would match up well together. We're just going to toss them in this regional. That could be kind of neat. I think that could be something that might toe the line between the football, like just completely smoke filled room thing, and doing it the good old fashioned math way that we love.
Well, it might help attendance and help bring back some of these Midwestern region possibilities if there was a little more ability to adjust that to fit your location and try and get the right teams there. And part of that problem has always been, at least lately, has been, you know, we only have the one West Regional, or even when you had two, like if you had 10 Western teams, that some of them have to go east. But none of the Eastern teams tended to end up going west at all, which is fine too. But yeah, I like the RPI. I like pairwise because, like you guys all said, you know, and once you get to the tournament season, the teams know what they need to do to guarantee themselves a spot, and know how much stuff's going to hurt them. And I think it's good that it's not unknown what needs to happen. For sure.
And I think it also should be said that any of the drawbacks with the pairwise and RPI the problem isn't pairwise and RPI. The problem is the nature of college hockey schedules and the fact that with the amount of games that we play in college hockey, there is such a limited amount of crossover games that gets fixed in other sports. Like if you watch basketball stuff on ESPN, they have RPI. They don't use it really, except for, you know, maybe as a comparison when you're in a smoke filled room, but it works a little bit better when you have more crossover games between the conferences right now.
I think the bigger problem is East versus West, the divide. Yes, there just isn't enough comparison there. Yeah.
Right. So there's so much that hinges on a small subset of games between East and West.
Yeah, and I do think the increase in independence is actually kind of helping that some, because you've got some Eastern and then Arizona State and the Alaska schools, and all of them end up playing each other at the end of the season. You see that with Alaska's schedule, where you're getting more crossover with that than a lot of other places, because those teams all need to play now and their conferences are pretty much done playing non-conference games. They're just
you get a little bit of the bridge from those teams, right? They bridge the gap between the Arizona States, and it seems like we sent half our league down to Arizona State at one point this year.
Yeah.
to play, which no, but it's good, especially if you can get wins. I know St. Thomas wasn't able to, but Minnesota State went down and swept. Tech went down and won the desert tournament, and that's probably one of the other bigger weekends other than Alaska. Looking like that BU Arizona State weekend is pretty big, because, you know, Arizona State beat Minnesota, and BU hasn't lost since, and they're playing tonight. But those are big. And another thing I was thinking about while you guys were having that conversation there was how much the polls, like the voted on poll. I have a vote. Those polls have diminished in meaning because of the pairwise, right? Because it used to be that's what you're looking at, is like, okay, well, the media thinks this, and I'm sure that the people who decide who makes the tournament without a pairwise are like, well, they've been in the top 10 all year unjustly or justly based on the numbers, we have those numbers now. So it turns the media poll into something that we kind of knew it was, right? I mean, especially fans. And publicizes it. It is what it is, and I think we've done a good job. And I think it's the fact that it's not a big deal, except for to say, hey, we've been number one or we're in the top 10. It's cool. It's bragging rights. It's whatever you want to make it, but it's not a be all end all. And you're not worried about what some writer in Boston or in Ohio or Detroit is going to say about your team.
Well, and the other thing that also I think happens too is, as we get into January, February, I think your pollsters start looking at the pairwise and seeing how it compares to what they think. And I think they start adjusting to the pairwise because that's the ranking. Like that's what it is. I mean, I know Tech didn't quite get up to 10.
Passion, talent, development. NCAA hockey offers all that, and its players graduate at a 93% rate. Trevor Zegras.
And they score on the lacrosse move.
Jake Gensel.
Gensel banks it towards the goal. He scores.
Kale McCarr.
He scores.
Stars on campus before the NHL stage. Whether you're a fan or a player, nothing compares to college hockey.
My goodness gracious me.
Visit collegehockeyinc.com and follow at College Hockey.
All right, joining me on the CCHA show is Bemidji State Athletic Director Brittany Lauritsen. And Britt, thanks for coming on and talking some, BSU athletics, but obviously primarily hockey here as we wind down towards the playoffs.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate you.
Britt, new to Bemidji State, but, been in athletic administration for a while. What kind of drew you to the Beavers and the opportunity you have up there?
Yeah, so Bemidji State, I think, had a couple of things that were really attractive to me. The multi-divisional aspect of it, having both D1 and D2 sports, was great. Obviously, having hockey, I'd never worked or been at a hockey institution before, so that seemed like a new challenge and a new opportunity. And I was familiar with BSU from some of my time serving on NCAA committees and other sports. So, those were all factors in applying. And even when you apply for things, you have an idea, like maybe this is it, maybe it's not. And when I came to campus on my interview and saw the size of Bemidji and the city itself and the campus and got to speak with President Hoffman and folks here, I knew we had a good thing going and a good core group to work with. So that really sealed the deal.
Some success of other sports this year. I know your soccer programs were very good. And then obviously football as well. What are some of the things you're proud of as the fall went along for you?
I look at all of our student athletes and it seems like they all have one thing in common, and that's buying into Bemidji State as being their home. And, I've seen in a lot of places where folks can say like, well, we don't have this, we don't have that, and kind of work from this like chip on your shoulder perspective. And, I think that's one way to be, and that's certainly motivating for some folks, but I think for our student athletes in particular, just owning who we are and not being motivated and working from a space of like, trying to prove something. Like, we know exactly who we are day in and day out. And, football and soccer definitely showed that this year, and they have a really good program and culture moving. But I see that in all of our sports, hockey included, that, we work from a different place and a different motivation. So that's something you don't always get at every institution.
Yeah, that's true. And, if you look at the CCHA from a CCHA perspective and a hockey perspective in general, not every school, in fact, there are fewer schools that do have both men's and women's hockey in the CCHA. You have St. Thomas, obviously, and BSU. What are those? I know coming from a program in RPI that did have both men's and women's hockey, those stabs tend to work off each other more than maybe some people see from the outside. Is that true for you folks as well?
Yeah, I think both of those staffs have a really good rapport. It's helpful that everyone's in the same hallway over at the Sanford Center. So You know, when I'm over there, I see all of our coaches, head and assistant coaches, kind of buzzing around, bouncing ideas off of one another. So it's not a stretch or not something out of the ordinary for somebody on the women's staff or somebody on the men's staff to pop their head in, ask a question, bounce around ideas. And I think it's a really good working environment and good mentorship and leadership in that space too.
What is what is your relationship with Coach Serratore? I know he's been here a long time and been in the profession a long time. What have you kind of maybe learned from him or picked up from someone who wasn't totally familiar with hockey at this level or in general?
Yeah, Coach Serratore's been great, and I always like to harken back to, I think, my first week here on the job. I get a call from Coach at about 5:30, 5:45, and he said, "Britt, I know that you're still at work. My wife and I are coming and we're taking you to dinner. Be ready in 15 minutes. And he did. And that was, you know, he said that day, he was like, "I know that you have a lot on your plate, but like, I want you to remember to take some time and get out and don't just get buried by it." And to hear somebody like him give that reminder of like, don't get buried by the work. You know, there is always work to be done. There's always more grind to be doing. But at the end of the day, you can't get buried by it. Tom and I think, have a great rapport. We bounce ideas off of one another quite a bit. It's awesome to hear his hockey knowledge. And he is such a good teacher and has been a good teacher for me, not so much having the hockey background. But we have found interesting ways to be able to learn from one another. Like, he knows I'm a big soccer person, and so during the Men's World Cup that we just had a couple of months ago, he came in and he would talk soccer. He was obsessed with it. He was watching all of those games. But there's a lot of similarities in some of those times and spaces, so they're not completely parallel, but there's enough there that we were able to share a common language, which I did not expect to find in hockey.
That's pretty cool. I grew up playing soccer too, so I definitely see that. And obviously the CCHA, as I work in hockey primarily, but it is fun to have those conversations. Absolutely. For you, I know, and for the league, looking to improve our championship experience for all of our student athletes, I know we've expanded a few things this year. What were some of the things that you heard from student athletes? I know we had we did some surveys and got some info back from the kids, but I think expanding things to the calling the semifinals and finals of the CCHA championships and expanding the gifts and trying to make the atmosphere a little more synonymous with a championship experience. What are some of the things that you look forward to in this championship season?
Yeah, that student athlete experience piece is key. And time and time again, in any sport, when you ask alumni the things that they remember most, they don't always remember scores, right? They don't remember wins and losses, but they remember specific instances, whether that's, walking into a hotel that is branded for a championship event and like knowing that we're here for that, or, you know, whether it's gifts or just signage, things like that. Those things stick in folks' memories. Those, 5-second little snippets, that's what people recall, and they recall bus rides and they recall the way things make them feel. And so any expansion that we can do on the tournament to make it clear to our student athletes that this is about them and it is important for them to feel like they're center stage, because it is truly, there are so many other things that go with it, but at the end of the day, their experience is the one that we want to invest the most heavily in.
And speaking of the CCHA and the playoffs, they're coming up in 3 weeks here. McNaughton Cup is one of the oldest, and it's a fantastic trophy. It's really, really a sight to see. It's gigantic for one thing. It's coming down to the wire here, and getting home ice is important. I know the Beavers have a big series coming up with Ferris State down in Big Rapids there, but. What's it like to follow these teams? I know the soccer team made a run in the NCAA tournament. Beaver's hoping to get there too, but seemingly needing to win the league to do so. What's it like as an athletic director getting a chance to follow these teams on their journeys in the postseason?
Oh man, from one perspective, I feel like it's you learn to be a statistician and a math and numbers person really quickly, because you run through all of the scenarios and you know, if this happens and that has to happen, and you know, you go through down the rabbit hole of that. And I like to engage in that, but I also like to sit back and watch our student athletes do what they do well, and watching kind of this run towards, you know, conference tournament and hopefully something big coming out of that. I think for me as an athletic director, just unwavering faith and support in our team and in our program, because at the end of the day, like every scenario that you can walk through, there are a lot of ways that those have to go out and play themselves out. And we can't control most of that, but what we can control is how we play and how we show up. And you can't buy in too much into thinking about what other teams have to do or have to accomplish or don't accomplish. We just have to go out and take care of business. And that's really, from my point of view, empowering our coaches and our student athletes. Just go out there and take care of it. Go out there and do what you're supposed to do. Enjoy what you're doing and give everything. And then where the cards fall, like, we'll deal with that. But we have to do what's best for us in our program and go as hard as we can.
Absolutely. It is going to be exciting. I know it's the championship. I know this is my first year working in the league, but I've followed it from afar, obviously, from past years. I know you know, you're diving headlong into an exciting year where the top seed is still up for grabs here. I wanted to change gears a little bit and talk about some of your other, you know, initiatives you've worked on at previous athletic departments and stuff you brought to BSU as far as, you're bringing a bystander training. I read about in your bio there and things you're looking to do to help, I think, student athletes across the board. I think you can doing it at your own institution and it can help out things nationally. What are you trying to do in that regard?
You know, a big part of what I think an athletics department should be is it should be tuned into the community and it should be a vital asset to the community. And in every space that I've been, trying to make those relationships and make folks feel like you don't have to be a diehard rabid fan to enjoy coming to athletic spaces. It is an event where you can commune with other folks. And I think that's really important. And so Make-A-Wish game last weekend was one of those. Student Athlete Advisory Committee brought that to me. And that just kind of evolved, you know, our SAC president brought that in August, and then it just kept getting layers and layers. And that's what we want. We want our community to show up for a cause that, you know, is bigger than hockey or bigger than any sport. But in general, for all of our student athletes at my previous institutions and here, you know, we need to focus really heavily on diversity, equity, and inclusion. And that's across the board. We've seen that where student athletes in all sports at the collegiate level have started using their voice for change. And for many years, student athletes didn't quite have the voice that they do now. And I think that it's inspiring and we need to empower them to do that. And so we have to be pushing the envelope when it comes to the DEIA+ space. And we have a president right now and an executive cabinet that is buying into that and is weaving that through everything. And so seeking out campus partnerships to me has always been kind of my calling card, something that I'm proud of professionally, is being able to partner across campus and make connections with departments and make allies of folks that aren't normally athletics allies or supporters. And those spaces are important, and it's important for the health of the institution. So whether you're doing something DEIA+ or you're doing sexual assault prevention and awareness through something like bringing in the bystander, it's on us, those types of things. There are a lot of ways that we can start to build that into our athletic curriculum, so to speak. And so this first year, I've taken a lot of time to just see kind of what initiatives are already going on this campus. And we have a fantastic SWA, Chelsea Stoltenberg, who has helped out with Student Athlete Advisory Committee and gotten so many things off the ground. Seeing what they do and then looking into next year, like, how can we build out a curriculum that ties all of these things in, makes a great fan experience, and allows our student athletes to be in an atmosphere that's conducive to their growth and, you know, their enjoyment of what their sport is.
Yeah, it's really interesting to hear what different campuses are doing, coming from somewhere where I was for a long time. And I know the initiatives that RPI did and the stuff they've, you know, their student athletes are, you know, seemingly going above and beyond, and hearing that that's going on all different places is great to hear. And you know, working at the league level is a little bit tougher, but it'd be nice to try to incorporate something league wide. I know the NCAA tries to do some stuff with concussions and different programs there, but it'd be great to have something league wide in the future that we could work on maybe over the summer. So that's really good to hear from you, Britt. And you know, lastly, I just want to ask you about, you know, your plans going forward for this department. I know you have those ideas you had, but just in general, things that the department is looking forward to in the upcoming, you know, end of winter and into spring.
Yeah, I scholarship and fundraising is always a big thing for us, making sure that we're not just being transactional in that space too, making sure that we're making great connections with our donors and making them feel a part of the Beaver family. That's high on the priority list. Always looking to improve facilities, things like that, get that on people's radars and make big changes. We're really blessed to have great hockey facilities. And so that's a plus in those sports. But really just, again, involving the community and making game day the place to be in Bemidji, whatever that sport is, and going out and seeking community partnerships, because we saw when we had the Bemidji Chamber of Commerce and so many local banks and other companies who really helped us get Make-A-Wish off the ground. We did that in feels like no time flat as far as planning. And if we can be really intentional about bringing more people into the fold, we can win new fans over and we can make them really enjoy and feel integrated into our community. So on the horizon, that's the biggest thing for me, is that integration.
Yeah, we can talk a little bit about some clinching type scenarios, and it's really kind of, unfortunately, you know, thanks or no thanks to Ferris State, who I do like to kid about, as you guys do, I'm sure, with Harrison as well. But their big weekend, right? Yeah. 5 points kept them in certainly within striking distance of the home ice. Mm-hmm. But actually, only Lake Superior State is the only team that still can't get home ice with 3 weeks to go. Now it's going to be tougher for a Northern and a St. Thomas, because they're, you know, a few games back as far as the Beavers are concerned, Bemidji State, but it's all still possible with 3 weeks to go. And with the 3-point win, you know, I think we might still have some twists and turns. Certainly with 1 point between 4 and 5, it's going to seemingly be down to the wire here. What do you guys think?
I have loved how much parity the conference has had this year, that we're in February and we still, like, it's still like throwing darts at a board how this conference could shake out. It's been really fun to see as a fan that has had this much parity. It's going to be even more fun as the league continues to develop. Like, I think we've definitely seen some, especially this past weekend, we've seen some flashes of St. Thomas getting to where we expect them to be in the near future. And I think that's really cool to see. I think that's really going to round out into being a very competitive league towards the top pretty soon.
Well, I think St. Thomas is coming along faster than folks expected, right? I mean, they didn't stay in doormat mode for long. You know, splitting with us, splitting with Minnesota State, splitting with Bowling Green. There's nothing to shake, like, a stick at.
They're 5-3-2 or something in their last 10. Is that right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, they've got the same amount of W's as they do L's there for the last few weekends. So that's not too bad for a team that just started up. So they're going to be frighteningly good. I think if you look 5 years down the road, they're threatening for the top of the league.
Once they have their facilities and they are. You know, right there in that Twin Cities market, and they're able to pick up some of those kids that are like playing prep hockey or in some of the more affluent suburbs, like, they could really be scary in a hurry.
Yeah,
I've been to two of their games too, and you know, I know it's a high school rink they're playing in, a prep school hockey rink there, but they fill it, and you know, they got pretty good lighting. It's not an ideal scenario by any means, but it is. You've been there too, haven't you, as a fan, right, Tim?
Oh yeah, I'm laughing because I saw a ranking of all the high school rinks in Minnesota, and I think it's ranked like 57th or something. And I might be too nice, because the other number that popped into my head was like 89th or something. I know it's a high school rink, but it is nowhere near one of the nicest high school rinks in the state, for sure. So I'm glad to see them moving on to someplace else. I don't think we ever talked about it on the podcast, about the giant donation from somebody that didn't even go to the school to help them build a new rink and some new facilities. It's pretty crazy the support that program gets from that family specifically. So
yeah, $75 million is the highest, the largest gift in Minnesota university, any university has gotten in Minnesota from Lee and Penny Anderson. It's going to be a basketball and hockey facility on campus. Cause there was some early talk, I think before I even, had considered, you know, the CCHA for anything, being somewhere, having the rink be somewhere else. But I think having it on campus is even better. It's in if people aren't familiar with the St. Paul area, like the Mac Groveland area, it's right in, I mean, for better or for worse, I know I'm sure some of the residents aren't too thrilled with having a hockey rink there. That's going to be, you know, putting 4,000 or 5,000, you know, people in it. But, I think it's going to be good for the actual student body, to be able to show up. Cause I think it's important for you guys as Tech fans who are able to walk to games, I'm sure. And in college, that's a big deal, not having to drive to go watch your team play.
To get the students to come, definitely.
Yeah,
it's a huge deal. I mean, look at Bemidji, even though they have that beautiful rink, even because it's not a stone throw from campus, sometimes it's tough to get students in the building. So yeah, it's definitely a huge deal.
I think my favorite thing about the standings right now is that unless Michigan Tech gets swept, we're going into the last weekend with a chance for the McNaughton Cup, because we've got a week off. Minnesota State, I believe, is off this week, right? And they play Bemidji the week after.
That is, Minnesota State is off this weekend. Yep.
Yep. So as long as Michigan Tech doesn't get swept, we're guaranteed a shot at, as long as they get a split, we're guaranteed a decent shot at winning McNaughton Cup going into that last weekend, heading to Mankato. Not that that'll be an easy task at all. But maybe we can get some help from Bemidji to make it a little easier. I never thought Michigan Tech would be sitting four games left with a 99% chance of a top three seed and basically a coin flip to win the McNaughton. I think that's pretty awesome. And then having Bowling Green, Bemidji, Ferris State kind of pretty much the ones that are fighting for those last two spots in the top three. I know Northern and St. Thomas have an outside chance, but it'd take a lot of work for that to happen. And I'm looking at playoff status right now. I don't know. I've never paid. I like using them, but I always take it with a grain of salt to see how much it says right now that St. Thomas has a less than 3% chance of home ice or fourth top four. Northern 7%. And Ferris State's 55% chance. So yeah, pretty interesting to see how that's going to all shake out here. I like the parity of the league. It'd be nice if teams other than Michigan Tech and Minnesota State had won some more non-conference games to push up the pairwise of the league, but can't be too unhappy with the fact that none of them, the league was so hurt over much time there, where especially the last, you know, the old or the new WCHA, where it seemed like we always had three teams in the bottom 10 in the pairwise, and that's never good, because all that does is hurt you and the profile of the league and everything. So it's nice to see, you know, St. Thomas did okay non-conference. In general, I think the league did pretty well overall. We just could have used a couple more wins, especially by Bemidji, Ferris, Bowling Green, to help the league, but it's nice to see everything top to bottom is interesting for sure.
Yeah, and the Lakers are playing better. I don't think anyone is, I mean, they were seemingly down in the dumps, right? But they've had a couple of good series in a row, like Superior State has, and whether it's been lineup shakeups or what, with the Isley and goal, they've been a better team. You know, it's tough to figure out Northern, but on any given night, you're right, they could have a good night too. So I don't think there's anyone, once we get to the playoffs, I don't think there's anyone that you can kind of really totally sleep on, especially with your season being on the line. It's going to be everyone seems to be a tough out at this point.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a couple upsets in the first round of the playoffs for sure this year.
Yeah, playoffs definitely. It definitely feels like more of these series have a really high probability of going three games. And there's nobody that, like, we had this conversation the other week with Harris and Watt about who would you want in the playoffs. And I think as Tech fans, we will probably continue to say Northern Michigan just from the rivalry standpoint. But like there, it's not like other years where there's a team where you're like, man, I really hope we get them because, you know, we've got a good shot at just sweeping them and not stressing about it. Like, I don't want to, as a Michigan Tech fan, I don't want to see Lake State again because we haven't done that well against them. St. Thomas is coming on and I don't really want to face them. And if it's a choice between those two or Northern, I'm going to take Northern every time just because I think the rivalry aspect and Tech has kind of had Grant Patalny's number to some extent. So
I want absolutely no part of Ferris right now. That's for sure.
Yeah, and I don't think we have to worry about that, hopefully.
Yeah, so. Hopefully not. But
at least not in the first round.
I think all of this conversation would just be a great way to pivot into how this weekend went. And, like, this is one of those weird weekends where, like, how Tech did was, like, the least interesting thing that I'd want to talk about. Like, I love that we walked away with the sweep, but it's the standard game of what happens when Michigan Tech plays Bemidji State, where it's a very defensively-minded game with – two very similar teams, two very similar coaching styles where goals are kind of at a premium. And I'm very happy we were able to take it to the Beavers and get a couple of good wins in there. But what was going on in the rest of the conference was really what got me excited this weekend. Like, Lake State taking one from Northern was huge. Ferris State, like, getting, you know, the conference sweep, the NCAA win and a tie was unbelievable against Bowling Green. St. Thomas getting their win against Minnesota State, I was losing my mind about that. That was so cool.
Well, and from a Tech fan perspective, it was huge.
All those other games fell just about exactly where we would want them to. To win McNaughton anyway, is all those games fell just about as well as we could have hoped them to. It was just a really fun weekend of conference games. It was a really enjoyable time to be a CCHA fan.
Yeah, but I only got to watch one or two games, not the rest, because I was at them. Although I did watch. Was it the end of Bowling Green Ferris with the shootout? And
probably the end, because it was the last game on Saturday.
Yeah,
oh, so I think I watched a little bit. Oh, yeah. I missed
that live because I just had it on my phone while the kids were all playing in the hotel room. But the bow was awesome. I love that. I guess I don't pay that much attention to Ferris State Bowling Green, and I know they've kind of been rivalry-ish because of the distance, but at the same time, I don't think Ferris has been I don't know how much of that rivalry has been as like back and forth as like Tech and Northern, where you've got, like, I'm not talking about like the previously built-in rivalry, but just like the back and forth of like, no matter how bad you are, anybody can win any given night, where I feel like Ferris finally has shown that. And maybe Harrison will correct me after he listens to this, that they've been doing better against Bowling Green than I thought, but it's really nice to see that get some teeth to it. And I love the goalie bow after the shootout win to just kind of be like, thanks guys, see you later. It was nice.
Yeah, I love those
a lot of action there. You had Austin Swankler's point streak ended at, I believe, 19 games, which is the longest in the country. He's certainly, I think, still going to be in the running for a Hobie top 10. Blake Bietola, I think, in that same boat. It's tough to make a huge argument, maybe David Cilia as well from Minnesota State, but it's tough to make an argument for what those two, you know, what players have done more for their team this year than those two guys, as far as Blake and Swankler.
I wrote this down earlier today. So Blake Pietola is top 10 in goals against average, save percentage, wins, shutouts, and saves. Now, he wasn't that high in saves until after Saturday night, which I guess isn't that surprising, since I think that's one of the first times he's faced that many shots in a game. He had 37 saves on the
Saturday 37 night. Saves, yeah.
And like some of these, like it's like he's sixth in goals against average, but like one of that, what is it, the Harvard guys only played like five games, but he must be just over the minimum to count. So like, yeah, top, he's sixth in goals against average, third in save percentage, second in wins, first in shutouts, eighth in saves. Like, if that's not the Richter front runner, I don't know who is this year, because it's not like Devin Levi's been blowing the socks off anybody. The other main candidate would be the Quinnipiac goalie, I would say.
Yeah, Peretz, yeah.
But he doesn't have as well-rounded stats as Blake does, and he's not getting the shutouts that Blake is. And what is it, four straight shutouts on Friday night now for him? So, and we get to laugh now. He is the first NIL deal for Tech Hockey Guide.
Or
we do our authentic Michigan Tech jersey sales, and somebody requested a Blake Pietola jersey, and somebody canceled their jersey order, so they got replaced. And I'm like, well, I guess we can reach out to the team now and find out what's going on with that. So Blake's gonna get a cut of that as our first ever NIL deal, which I think is kind of cool and very fitting. I know I talked to Joe about it a little bit, and he made some joke about, he's like, no, I'd love it if the stands were full of Blake Pietola jerseys. He deserves all the accolades. So it was kind of cool. I think Joe understands where his bread is buttered this year. So
it's not easy. I don't think it's easy too, to be the preseason goalie of the year, right? We've seen it's in all the pressure, or whatever you want to call it, is on you. To be the guy, and to still go out and do it, I think is a certain level of fortitude, and you know, he hasn't, I'm not gonna say he's done it yet, but I'm saying like what he's done so far has certainly been enough for me to say like it's been to go out and walk the walk after maybe you didn't talk the talk, but somebody talked the talk for you, and being able to do that is a pretty big deal, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's even obviously the shutouts are there, which has been really impressive. But like to be leading or that high in all those categories, despite having a 5-goal night against Bemidji and a 4-goal night against Bowling Green, where he only played half a game, and of what was it, 5 against Western and half a game before he got pulled, like to still be that high in all those categories. And a lot of it's just because of this last stretch since we left Arizona. He's played in what, 8 games, has 4 shutouts, and allowed what, 5, 8, 9, 10, 11 goals in 8 games. So it's pretty impressive. And how many straight awards has he won? Is it 3 or 4?
3 in a row and 6 on the year as far as weekly.
Yeah.
Joining me now on the CCHA show is Bradley Merrick, a sophomore forward for Ferris State. And Brad, thanks for taking a few minutes to talk some Bulldogs hockey.
Yeah, thanks so much. I really do appreciate it. Excited to be here.
Yeah, Brad and the Bulldogs in a tight race trying to get into the top 4 in home ice. They're home this weekend. They actually have 2 home series left this year. And what's just the feeling, you just got out of practice. What's the feeling on the ice and in the locker room right now?
Yeah, we're excited, ready to go. Not too high, not too low, though. Ready to go with this upcoming home weekend, like you said, and it's a big 6 points on the line for us, being able to go against a team who's one ahead of us. So that would put us in a huge spot. And, like you said, we got one more home weekend after that. So to close the season out against, you know, a tough Lake State team too. And but no, we're excited and ready to go.
This has been kind of a whirlwind season for you guys, but I want to go back to last year. You played every game for Ferris. You're the rookie of the year in the league. You know, what was last season like, and what were some of the biggest things, your biggest takeaways, biggest learning points from last season you took into this year, you think?
Biggest learning points is just you can't take a game off, you know, and this is a really tough league. I mean, there's right now two teams in the top 20, but I feel like there could be way more. I mean, you know, even you look at St. Thomas, how much they've improved over just 1 year. I mean, such a good program over there, and a lot of respect for them. And but you have to give respect to every team in the league. And I think that's something you learn. I carried over from last year, is that no matter who you're playing, you got to take it night by night, and you know, work as hard as you can every night, because every point's important.
You guys, as we mentioned, are playing and trying to get to home ice, and that'd be great to be able to play at home. But is there a part of you and a part of this team that kind of relishes being the, like we saw it last weekend, right, with you guys at Bowling Green, that relishes being the underdog or the team going into different hostile environments around the conference?
Yeah, it's fun to definitely go in, like earlier in the year going against Minnesota State and being able to, you know, take 6 points from them. But, you know, we got to be able to close those out and do it at home. And we have a different rink than a little bit everybody else. It's, you know, different environment, a little bit smaller. And we have to be able to take our home ice advantage and capitalize on it. But no, we like being underdogs, but we also want to be that top guy, you know, too. But it is fun though.
For you, you know, through your junior career with, you know, Central Illinois and in Youngstown and Muskegon, has your you know, style of play changed at all from your juniors player to now your freshman year? And you're putting up the same kind of point totals as you did last year in the CCHA, which is sometimes tough. People talk about maybe a sophomore slump, but have you changed how you play the game throughout your career?
I think more in juniors, my game was more defensive just until I got to Muskegon and kind of got that confidence boost. And actually through Cody Chep, former Ferris State player, he was my assistant coach there. You know, give me the confidence, and Mike Hamilton there, the head coach, really believed in me and gave me that kind of confidence back to when I was, you know, younger and trying to get into USHL. But I feel like more of that's came back now, and it led into my freshman year, and the coaches let me play into it here, and it worked out for me. And yeah, now I just need to continue doing it.
You blocked a lot of shots last year. Do you feel like that's a strong part of your game still? And do you guys as a line or as an offensive forward group, do you guys have, you know, that defensive, I guess, attitude that you have to have?
Yeah, I mean, I think responsibilities are huge for us on our team. And, you know, coach says a lot, you know, offense stems from good defense. And I think that's part of my game. I'm, you know, trying to work hard and watch video individually by myself is, you know, looking at that defensive, what I could have done here or what would have, you know, helped us get out of the zone faster. It would, you know, what could I do different, basically?
You guys have 3 shootout wins this year. I know you're not necessarily a part of that specifically, but mm-hmm. what makes your team so good in those, you know, also an overtime win. So it's 4 victories in OT or in shootouts, but the 3 shootout wins lead the CCHA. Is there something that you guys make you guys a good shootout team?
Yeah, we got Logan Stein and Noah Giesbrecht. That's probably one of the big things. And then Stepan Pokorny and Jason Branchow. I mean, Antonio Venuto scored one. I think we got a lot of, you know, guys that can score goals, but it's pretty tough to score on our goalies. I think, you know, and they've proved that night in and night out. No matter who's in the net, we have confidence in them, and it's huge for us.
You know, looking ahead to, you mentioned, you know, Bemidji State coming in here. Is there anything you guys are working on? And obviously just trying to stay healthy and get through the week, but does anything coach is emphasizing for this upcoming weekend?
Yeah, just play full 60s both nights. You know, we as a group know we got to play hard, and at the end of the day, you know, play for each other. That's, you know, what really works for us is, when we bear down and we play together and we play our style of hockey that we know we can play, It's tough for teams to, you know, play that for a full 60, but we're well conditioned and we can do it for a full 60, and sometimes some teams can't, so we have to take advantage of that every day.
You guys put together a pretty good run in December. You know, you had some up and down series in January, but was there a point when you felt like that you could, you know, a point in this year where you felt like you could play with anybody? Was it the GLI win over Michigan State, or obviously you mentioned that the sweep you guys had at Minnesota State, but was there a moment when you guys as a group kind of realized what kind of potential you guys had?
Yeah. You know, we kind of always, you know, like every team kind of says it before the year, you know, we're a special group, this and this.
Yeah.
And we were a good group last year, like, and we lost, you know, a couple important seniors and whatnot, but we knew going into this year that we were carrying a lot of good guys and our freshman class was good coming in. And, but I think that when we went like a 5-game or 4-game streak, a win streak or something. And, you know, we're like, why not, you know, why not us? Right. So we were just off the top 20 a couple times or top 25 a couple times. And it's just, you know, stringing more and more together that we need help with.
Your freshman class, I know you were just a freshman a year ago. Are there any players in that group that you specifically have, you know, kind of maybe bond a little more with you know, kind of seen yourself a little bit in them and just kind of, you know, work with them off the ice or on the ice even a little bit more, just knowing that you're, you know, becoming more of a veteran on the team?
Yeah, I mean, I like to talk to all of them, really, honestly. Not just saying that for the interview, but
yeah.
I love all the guys in the freshman class. And,
yeah,
you know, they bring it each night. And, I mean, we have 4 or 5 of them every night in the lineup, maybe 6, you know, playing important roles, which is huge for us. We need them just as much, you know, so it's really huge for us, and we're really lucky to have them.
Talked about Nolan and Noah there, you know, when you're in practice, how many goals do you guys score on them? Generally, are they tough to score on in practice? Is it?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, it's tough to, you know, it's tough anyways to score. And then you got them to score and got them to beat. It's tough. They're two top notch goalies. And like I said, we're so lucky to have them.
What's it like having Harrison as your SAD and broadcaster there? Harrison Watt, I know he gives you guys a hard time sometimes, but it's all in fun, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, he's a great, you know, he does a great job at really every day. I mean, he's always in with the guys chatting. And so we have that personal connection, which is great. And then, you know, might send you a text to something funny or, you know, you did this or, you know, whatever. He's always got your back too, which is great. And I love Harrison. So he does an awesome job.
Trying to get some more fans in there. I knew it had a pretty big crowd for the Tech series, but, you know, with the importance of these last 4 home games, including this weekend, it's cool. They're trying to get some more seats and some more fans in the building. Is that something you guys are actively doing as players too, or trying to help the cause there?
Yeah. You know, Harrison talked to us yesterday about, you know, sharing stuff on our stories or Instagram or Twitter, yeah, whatever it is. It is huge for us. Like being a smaller rink like that, when it gets loud, it's really loud in there and we feed off that. So we love it.
And lastly, you guys, you know, special teams wise, do you guys feel like you're coming along in those departments this year, and what can you kind of attribute that to?
I think Mark Kaufman does a great job with our penalty kill, you know, behind the bench. But then I think guys are just are willing to buy into, you know, blocking shots or getting the puck out in key times, and no matter who it is on the ice, they're a 4-man unit or on the power play, 5-man unit. We just got to play hard and get pucks to the net and run our plays, because we just have to believe in ourselves that we can do it, and we've proven it time to time.
I do want to point out that Kevin Langseth, who's in charge of our officiating, does a great job, and he watches everything that our officials are doing. He's not like me. I have like all 4 games going on at once. He goes through every single game. And he makes, you know, he gives feedback to all the officials, and like the amount of care he puts into it, it's hard for me to hear the negative, feedback from people, knowing how much, you know, the officials they're doing their best job. And it's probably, I'm going to say it's harder to be an official than it is to be a player, because a player you're just kind of reacting and going about your business, whereas the official has all these different things they're supposed to be keeping track of, and it's you're supposed to make, you know, snap decisions. You know, people talk about replay maybe being a more of a hindrance than a positive in some cases. I mean, not to like to decide whether something's a goal or not, but people be able to watch and see, you know, in slow motion whether something was a trip or not, or what something was contact to the head. Now they're able to go back and watch some of those things. But I think officiating has gotten much better, and you see it in every sport, NBA, NFL, what have you, right? It's impossible to get every single thing right. You have to just, you know, get your best people out there with the best information and do the best they can. So I do want to defend, especially CCHA officials, but really officials in general, who are basically, you know, given a harder and harder job, the better cameras and the bit more angles we have on every single play.
Yeah. And
I just like the fact that if you look at the stats of people playing, right? We talk about goalies with a save percentage of in the 900s and whatever being good. They're not perfect either, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Not everybody's making every single shot and every single pass either, but the ref's expected to be perfect 100% of the time. It's not going to happen. You're going to miss stuff.
And I think
plain and simple.
I think one of the best things Dustin and I ever did was hang out with the refs and get to know them.
I ref too.
Because it became
just not hockey.
Because you understood that, like, they're doing the best they can, and you get to know the guys, and it's not like any of them have vendettas against teams. I remember,
and everybody thinks they do. It's the craziest thing. You're just like, no, I just want to ref a good game.
Yeah, exactly. And we're at least pretty pro official on the podcast. I don't know if I can speak for way too many people, but it's at the end of the day, I want to see us win, but beyond that, I want to see a good, clean game by the rules, and who's going to make sure that happens, you know?
Well, Friday night, there were zero penalties in Michigan Tech, Minnesota.
Yeah, that was just
awesome. That's like when we had...
And I don't even think there was maybe two things that could have been called, and I don't even think they reached to the level, like, I think they were on par with the no call in the Minnesota State St. Thomas game.
Yeah.
Like, they weren't, like, the fans booed a couple times because they wanted a power play, but it wasn't what they thought it was. It was just two guys getting tangled up or whatever. Like, there was nothing that happened. It was really good.
Friday night was exactly what Kevin was talking about when we had him as a guest last season, where if you get a game like that when both teams are playing hard and by the rules, it is the best place on earth to be an official, because you're just basically a fan with the greatest seat in the house.
Yep. Now, I'll say that game wasn't the most exciting thing in the world.
It was a Bemidji Tech game.
I know, but Saturday night had some power plays and penalty kills and like some shots that like went through the crease but missed kind of stuff. Friday didn't have any of that. Like, I took my girlfriend and her 5-year-old, that was his first game ever. Well, that's not a good game for a 5-year-old to get excited about hockey, because there's no, you know, there's no power play moment where they're pumping in the music or any of that stuff. Like, I enjoyed it from the perspective of it was a good game and my team won, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't exciting. But that's Michigan Tech Bemidji a lot of times. Like, and I know our Discord got a little nervous about that game, but honestly, there was no point in that game after Tech scored that I really felt threatened by Midgey, and that's a testament to the way Tech's been playing defense, especially lately, that, like, yeah, maybe they gave up a couple goals Saturday, but both games, they had them completely in hand and under control, and it was wonderful to see how well that team showed up top to bottom all weekend. It was great. I think you agree, Dustin, from what you saw Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, I never thought it was in question the entire game. Like, just they just seemed to be in control despite the shots, you know, the difference in shots between Bemidji and Tech, and I was never nervous about it. I don't know why, but it just felt like it was going to be a win the whole time.
Yeah.
Which is really nice.
It is, especially it's very different than some years past, for sure.
It's really frustrating when you're Lucas, when you see your team play a really good game and it never really feels like they're in it. Lucas is our Bemidji fan that likes to hang out on our Discord, but he's
on that note, we're looking ahead to 23-24. I know I'm gonna have a conversation with our IDs and coaches about it, but I know when the CCHA reformed, there are, you know, standards that all eight schools agreed to meet by next year's season. I know some of schools were slower to bring them in. Some of them came in immediately, like a Minnesota State, who already had a great production under Greg Vandermeuse up there. But I know that even in the last couple of years, I know Northern's looks really good, and Tech, from what I've heard, has made some improvements to their cameras, and at least the number of them, and some in the quality. And there's obviously a few schools that we're trying to get to where everybody else is, but the goal is to have, as you know, as little a difference as you can see in quality, at least between Team A and Team B on our stream. So that's one of the things that we're as funny as the Chipmunks may be for you guys.
we want
those guys to go away permanently, so we can all enjoy Beavers hockey.
Well, Fair State's done a lot to improve the quality and everything, but I know they went through some growing pains there that first weekend when Tech was down there with some interlacing issues, and something's not quite right. But you can tell that the quality was way better that weekend. It was just the similar issues of interlacing instead of or some kind of leg issues that were causing some problems, but yeah.
And I'll stand up on my broadcasting soapbox for just like 1 second here and just zoom out. Just let me see the whole zone. Just zoom out, please zoom out.
Yeah,
I hear you. But the bottom line for me is it's really nice to hear that the like standards for broadcasting are such a big point of emphasis for you, Perry. And it's been noticed, especially from being fans in the old WCHA, where it was pretty much just everybody throws their own thing together and who God knows what quality you're paying for in a given night. And
oh man, those old Huntsville broadcasts were the best.
Yeah, those could get pretty tough. And we're not quite there yet, but there is much less of a drastic drop off in quality from at least the camera perspective from like teammate to teammate.
It's noticeably better. The graphics packages are what they are across the league now, so you get that similar experience in and out depending on who you're watching. You don't, you know, it's still the same set. Everything looks great. It's definitely been a big improvement. And you know, even Tech, like you said, has gotten better over since the start of the year. Things looked a little washed out at the beginning of the year, and whatever's changed there and how they're setting things up is much better compared to how it was at the start of the year, even.
Yeah, we're getting there. And I think hopefully after another summer, I get a chance to actually maybe have some, it's tough to make a lot of changes when you're in season, but I think if I can have some more conversations with all the production folks together, and we try to have those over Zoom, I think we're getting to a point where we want to be. You know, there's going to be some technical difficulties no matter where you are, right? I mean, so
I work in IT. Stuff doesn't go right all the time. I get it.
So we just want it to work 90 to 99% of the time, and then we'll be in a good spot.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the CCHA Show. For stories, scores, stats, and more, visit ccha.com.